Hey, listeners. Recently, I ordered some new equipment for the C-Lab podcast. When a couple of weeks had passed, I still didn't have it. I hopped online to check the tracking details. Yep, for sure, my order made it from overseas to the U.S. within only a few days, but then it got stuck in a postal warehouse nearby for almost a week. And then it hit me. It's the classic last-mile problem. For product suppliers, the most expensive and complex part of getting a product delivered to your customer's doorstep isn't the hundreds of miles traveled at the beginning of its journey. It's that final mile. Sound familiar? That's because it's the same with customer education. We create expert learning content for customers and users, and then what? Just 5% or less of that is sometimes actually even viewed. Most everything we create is at the mercy of CSMs and our customer admins themselves, and if they don't proactively push this material along to our users, most of them aren't going to go looking for it on their own. So, we're excited to share that Brainstorm is solving this last mile problem for customer education teams. Brainstorm enables you to empower your customers with turnkey end user training campaigns, including adaptive learning flows, events, emails, surveys, and more. Customers just have to hit go. Learn more and get a free 90-day trial today when you visit brainstorminc.com/CELab. Hey everybody, Dave Darrington here, and welcome back to C-Lab. Today's episode is a little bit different. This one's a crossover. Back on July 14th of 2026, I sat down with Casey Trulio and also with Todd Kirk of Brainstorm for a webinar called Rethinking Content Syndication in Customer Education. It was a great conversation and a small room. And that's exactly why we're replaying it here, because the size of the room did not match the size of this problem. So here's the setup. Every one of us has done this. You build something that's genuinely good, a course, a curriculum, an onboarding path, and then you put it behind your portal and you wait. And your customer, who has 11 other vendors doing the same exact thing to them, does not come. So we tell ourselves it's an engagement problem or a content problem or a marketing problem. But really, this is a distribution problem. And we keep solving it one channel at a time. The phrase I keep coming back to here is build once, distribute many. Not build once and post it in one place and hope. Build once and split it. One copy runs inside for enablement. One copy goes outside to customers where they already are, shaped to what they already bought. And I want to be honest with you here. Omnichannel is the right answer, and it is hard. It is the hardest part of this job, because the moment you push content out into somebody else's environment, what happens? You lose visibility, you lose track, it goes into a black hole. That fear is very real, and I've lived it. There's a story in here about a customer who demanded all my content outright, and what that moment did, how it made me feel, and how I think now about distribution, which has changed a lot over time. What Casey and I get into is the way out of that standoff, what it looks like when the vendor keeps control and the customer gets autonomy. What shared reporting does to accountability when both sides can see the same numbers. Why non-engagement with your training is one of the earliest churn signals that you're currently just throwing away. One note before we roll, this is customer education, but it's not only customer education. If you're in enablement, L&D, support, marketing, I don't care, wherever you're building content for an audience that doesn't just work for you, the same math applies. So a big thanks to Casey and the team at Brainstorm for letting us bring this over. And here's the conversation.
Welcome, everybody. We are so glad to have you here with this webinar of Rethinking Content Syndication in Customer Education. I am joined by an amazing guest today, Dave Darrington. Dave, glad to have you here, sir.
It's always great to be hanging out with you all. This is we have the best conversations. So
and that's what our webinars are designed to do. I don't know if people have attended our past webinars that we've had. We had Courtney Semblar on, where we talked about, you know, using the right type of content in the right situation. This one is Rethinking Content Syndication. Look for more of these webinars to come, where we bring in what I like to say experts in the field, people that have done your job, are in your job, and at times are wrestling with these same type of conversations that we're having today. So Dave, most people know you because of your podcast that you have. You're very mm-hmm. active on LinkedIn, but just in case someone hasn't heard of you, give them your background. What do you do? How can they find you before we get started?
Sure. Okay. Well, I have a long and varied background, but I'd like to bring it over the last 10 years where I joined Gainsight in about 2015. Before that, mm-hmm. You can look at my resume. I've done all the things. I've been a scientist. I've been a public speaker. I've run tournament events. I've done all kinds of stuff. But what really was compelling to me is that I found my inner teacher at some point. Mm-hmm. And at Gainsight, I started building customer education programs and really got into this kind of a new way of thinking. When I think about customer education, those that are in our orbit and our network and our community, we're not thinking about the traditional ways that you would normally do. Hey, we've got a classroom, you sit in the classroom, you do the things. No, this is new, right? This is a different motif. So since that time, I've been at a company called the Zooko, I've been hired by Okta. I've been at Outreach, which was another sales engagement platform. I've been at Atlassian, I've been at Service Rocket, and I've done work on my own. Of course, now I'm at Vast Data as a customer education manager. What I really appreciate and what Adam and I both said was really important for the C-Lab podcast that we've done for 8 years now is to be in the trenches and doing the work. Yeah. So what you said before, it resonates with me. It's not my journey to ratchet up the ladder and, I'm looking at all the breadth and the depth of what we do in our field. And that's the biggest thing I do as well as C-Lab. And that's my extracurricular for every other week. We've got a podcast. And the goal in that is to really connect you with the people who are just like this, doing the work every day. They're in the trenches. They're fighting the fight. They're learning and they're sharing. And that's the most important thing. No one person has the key to the kingdom. It's a network. So the more we all work together and collaborate, the better picture we'll have about where to go next. So
that's awesome. My background. If we were in a church, I'd say, can I get an amen on that? So let's get started around that.
Love that.
Content syndication. Dave, this is a common thing we hear from customer education, right? We have an account executive, a customer success manager that dials us up and says, Dave, this is one of my biggest accounts. I need to help them out. They're asking for our content. Give it to me so I can send it over to them. Design content syndication, why is it a problem? Explain a little of that for our audience today, just in case they're not familiar with the term.
I'd like to start, Casey, with a story.
Okay.
A story that resonates emotionally, and I hope it does with everybody in the audience too, because this is one that I used to be very bullish on. So exactly what you said, hey, this customer, let me frame it up. So I'm not going to mention the company, but I was at this company and I got connected with an enablement manager at a big client. This person knew our CEO and said, hey, your CEO said you're going to do this for me. I need you to give me all of your content and, wrap it up in a bow and give it to me. And I said, no. Right. And it wasn't because I didn't want to. It was because, one, I'm being pressured to do so, but two, it doesn't benefit anybody to do it mm-hmm. like that. Meaning, okay, mm-hmm. I just get the dump truck up, pull all the learning in it and dump it over to you. And then, whatever happens, it's a black hole. Mm-hmm. So what happens in that? The difference that I think, and this is a key point around this whole black hole, is that those of us in the field that we're doing education or training need information. And it's not just the vanity metrics that,
right.
Oh, you came to my class. Cool. You showed up for the webinar. Yay. It's not that. It's now because of software as a service. And because we have this word called telemetry, product usage data, where I can say, Casey, I saw you were in Brainstorm yesterday and you did this and this, but you got stuck. It's not big brothery. I'm trying to monitor you, but I'm looking for trends and themes to know where you get stuck or where you need to learn more or how to push you along that learning journey. Right. And that if I give you all of my content and you put it in your own internal LMS, two things happen. You start sliding on accuracy in relevance and currency. And then you get disconnected, so that I see a lot of people go, oh, well, no, we're just gonna make our own training out of this because we can't afford to do this big training at this company that they're gonna charge us for. We're gonna do it our own. So now you have the disharmonious, you know, disconnect between you and your customer, and that service is no one. I don't get data. I don't know what you need. I can't be connected with you. The customer gets the decreasing fidelity of the content, and they go off in their own direction. And then it's a black hole. That's a terrible situation.
Okay. It's like you've seen these slides, Dave. Again, everybody's aligned at the beginning of a purchase. Everybody is aligned. I have a product that I believe solves a challenge. The customer has a challenge. They look for a solution. They find said product. They go, this sounds fantastic. We want to buy it. They buy it. They spend money. They spend time evaluating it. Okay, I buy the product. Okay, well, in order to get what we need out of the product, we need to solve for the problem for which we bought the product for. And the software vendor says, great, I want to help you in all these different ways. And this is where it starts to break down, right? This is where people get misaligned. And that's why we sit at an average core feature adoption rate of less than a quarter of the feature set. I was just on with a software vendor. They do legal software. And they just said they were just in the training. And they had a really irate customer say, I need your product to do this, 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 and this. And the trainer said, yeah, it's done that for 5 years. Here's where you go do it, right? It's just, that's where the disconnect starts to happen. So let's look at the two-sided standoff. I love, again, shout out to the Brainstorm marketing team. They're so good. I love this. We have two, I like to think of just like, let's go back into the old West, right? We have two people with hats. And they have their guns on the side, their holsters, and they're standing off staring at each other like who's going to go first? So let's take this, Dave, from the software vendor side. Why are some reasons why, as a customer education professional, I'm not super excited about turning over all this content? Talk to us about this.
Yeah, because what you have on the screen here is really prescient, right? It's once I share something with a customer, it's gone. I've opened the box. I've given them the gift. They've got everything. I lose control. Now, when I say that word of control, it's a pejorative, right? It's, I want you, Casey, you customer, to have the best, the most current, the most relevant, the most up-to-date material that you could possibly have that fits your needs, right? So, well, if I give that all to you, then you have an instructional designer internally convert that or do something else with it, put your own narrative around it. Now, you know, I don't know what you're looking at. And just like you said, this is a real practical case. I've had customers say, well, I'm not going to use those things. And I don't want to train my team on those things because of this reason. Right. And that's a nuance that I never really expected to come up. Sometimes there's real reasons why a customer wouldn't want to pursue something. But then again, conversely, the art of the possible is usually what we're trying to elicit, this sense of discovery and exploration in the software package. I want to nudge you, I want to bump you, I want to get you to understand stuff. Oh, you didn't know that. Look at this. Share this with your team. Have an enablement cycle. Do some loops, you know, and get your team to understand at more depth. This is a massive chronic problem because, you know, if I have access to everything and it's already in my workspace, it's already connected up to SSO, everything is there, but yet, I, Dave, at my company, have curation over that content, then everybody wins. So control is meaningful in that, because if I have control of the curation and the customer has some control over the narration, then between the two of us, we have control now. But it's a different way, a nuanced way to think about it.
Yeah. Two points you hit on that is great is, Dave, you've done this for what, 11, 15 years. I think you're pretty good at it, right? And it's funny that you're like, I can help you. Just let me help you. I know how to do this. I can help users get to that next level. But I think what people are being shocked at in today's environment is everybody's coming out with new features faster than ever. Your programmers might be using AI to program things faster. So you're coming even with more features faster. So
Absolutely.
What you said about a customer might not be using everything in the product. Well, I don't want to train all my users on everything in the product. I want something that's tailored to me. And this is where the customer comes in. So let's talk about the customer side of thing. And you nailed one on kind of with the software vendor a little bit, but the customer is like, hey, you know what? I'm not ready for your AI tool. We're still going through our AI governance policy. We're not allowing that to be in there. So any message of your AI tool set, I can't give in the education. So what you're sending me to has all this information around it. I can't have my users stumbling upon that. So talk a little bit more about from the customer's point of view, why they want the content, why they want this information. They're just not control freaks on their side. Talk to us a little bit about that, Dave.
Maybe they are, and that's not a bad thing, you know, but I think the hardest thing in here, again, let's go back and talk about education services in the contrast between education services and customer education, or even L&D, right? In a services mentality, okay, you say, Dave, I need this content. I will build it for you. I'll customize it and I'll send it to you. Right. And then you've got it. And now we have an engagement. Well, I'll have to keep all that up. That's a lot of work. Right. What a customer generally doesn't want, and this was more of a surprise to me over time, where I used to be in the camp of, oh, I'm going to build my academy or university. I'm going to put everything up in it and everybody's going to come to me. That is not accurate. It's not untrue, but I always give attribution to Donna Weber about this. Like, if you build it, they won't come. It's a reverse build, right? And the real feeling is sometimes, like, it's not the customer as a whole gestalt, right? It's an individual. What are they doing? Well, they might find the vast university and go there and find a bunch of information. Cool. But internally, we have enablement systems and structures and tooling, like Brainstorm, for example, where we can serve up what we want curated and set in a way that's both flexible for that customer. I don't want this. I don't want this. I want this, right? So we've curated and cut out a bunch of stuff that's extraneous. Now they have control. Yeah. Okay. Hey, cool. No, you're right. You did for me what I asked. I didn't want to see this and this, since we might want to see it later. And at that point, they go, oh, no, turn it on. 3 months in, 6 months into a contract. Now the team has moved past the governance and now they're getting into the next thing, right? And then there's that, this is one of the absolute hardest things too. You can be on both sides of the table, fighting back and forth, you know, like we were talking about the duels. And this goes back to, and I'll mention Todd in the webinar we did. Well, we did like a webinar and podcast together on the two hump problem. Where, again, I want to pinion the fact that we are not in a fight with customers. They're not in a fight with us. We're in a relationship. And that we both need to share and be flexible around what's being surfaced, how it's being reported against. Now, take the scenario where you go, okay, well, I'll serve off all the content. Cool. Now my customer says, can you give me all the people that did the training? And like, oh, God, how many report? I have to generate all these every now. I have to automate that. I go to business ops. Okay, no. The customer needs that data as much as I do. We need to share in that. But the customer doesn't want to be burdened by having to build all the content themselves either, because that's what I'm here for. So we break that dependency loop where we say, okay, you have to come to us. Now I can service you, open up the pipeline. You've got all this content. We can work as a partner to curate that material, and we both have what they need. Now they're engaging at a deeper level.
Dave, so good, because what you're saying is this isn't a problem. This is actually something that, if solved for, aligns both people to get what they're looking for, right? Which is what we said at the beginning, I want to solve a problem. And wow, I'm solving it. This is the best thing ever. So I love the reframe. This isn't actually a problem. This is the chance to accelerate adoption of the product, which leads to the outcomes that the customer bought it for. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. Right. Again, customer education is differentiated from education services and even L&D, because we're focused on delivering desired outcomes. I know how to use this thing. I've got my entire, I know how to get my team to use this thing. I know how to motivate people to understand the most important things of why this is, you know, for example, a customer might want to put a little video in front of all of my training from the CEO to say why this is such an important training material, right? We don't deliver that because we don't frame things in the terms of the customer. The fear is that, hey, I'm scared, you're scared. Why are we blockading our content? Learning to be free. That's where adoption dies, is that now it's a pain in the butt. I'm not going to do it. I'm out. I'm going to use the product as little as I can until I turn.
Yeah. Ah, amazing. Okay. So let's just dive a little bit into it, because I think this is where, and you're hearing a lot of things on social media right now about, hey, is the LMS dying? I don't think that's actually true. I just don't think it was designed, which makes sense for the challenges we face today, right? If I have my flip phone and I'm going to try to use it for a GPS while I'm in another country, well, that tool wasn't built for that. So talk to us a little bit about this, Dave, of why we need to push our vendors to say we need to adapt to the challenges that are being faced today. What you have from 2005 isn't good enough anymore. Talk to us about what you're seeing here on this screen.
I like this slide in particular. And again, I want to caveat this heavily because I work with a lot of LMS vendors. I've used so many platforms. What's happening is an evolution, right? Mm-hmm. And AI is also heavily pressuring this change, this forced evolution, so to speak, where, okay, let's go back 2005. I'm sitting there trying to build a program. It's really easy for me to say, pick an LMS, one that's suitable for me. What do I need to do? Okay, well, I stand it up, I get so many seats, I have so many, you know, monthly active users that I can have on it, or so many people that I can have go through training. So that's built for an annual cycle. Once a year, hey, that's great when we had one update a year, realistically, back in the olden times, as we would say. And that LMS model, it follows the motif or the pattern of more conventional learning. Meaning vanity metrics. I'm going to hammer that point all over. I don't care how many completions there are really for a customer. Now, if it's a compliance situation, and that's where most of the LMS programs came from, it's a human resources, a human capital management thing, where it is absolutely requisite for people to have taken this training and that training, the other training, whether it's good or they like it or not. Now we're herding cats, right? We can't make, there's no such thing as compliance training where it costs money, right? And now we get into this one size fit all. Okay, that's not really working anymore because internal, external, customer, partner, what, you've got all these different things. There are so many, and this sounds to those of you who might be new to this field, this is so heavily nuanced that it seems to be such a great idea to go buy one system that will do service everybody and everything, but it's not happening even today. Yeah. And it's actually going to get destroyed more. And then we have this interoperability problem. Like, how do we, moving back and forth? So let's look at what's true now. Look, we're shipping products sometimes weekly, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I can, so I will. So you're getting micro updates and things all the time. Some companies don't even really have a true quarterly update. It's kind of horrifying to me because it really should be calendrical in some fashion so I could have a team to keep up. You know, that ship sailed. Now we're keeping up as best we can. Adoption is most important. The behavioral, psychological impact on human beings, not a, okay, well, did you take that course? Well, that's really negative, man. Why are you hounding me to go look at this course? But I got 3 minutes in and I got what I need and I'm out.
Yeah.
So micro level content, smaller content, but yet constellated in strings and chains and, you know, learning pathways. But when I need something and I need to learn, I need it now. It's the TikTok, YouTube type mentality, but expressed through a more enterprise grade system, right?
Dang.
Speaking of enterprise.
Dave, that was a good quote. We got to quote that one out. That was solid.
That was a great one. I forgot it already. But go back one more step. I wanted to talk with that. So that enterprise in particular, enterprise, I'm leaning in and I'm talking to you, all of you in particular, because the felt experience of reality of working with an enterprise grade customer, large organization, it's been around for a while. They're publicly traded, maybe. They have their ducks in a row. They have provision, procurement. They got all this stuff. these folks need a curated experience too for them, customized, because every customer is somehow, I'm not using the word snowflake, because like that's negative, but every customer has nuanced differences. There's a general MVP, a core, you know, what is not MVP, but at least common denominator of content. But then it threads from there. And that's where you want to bring other people in and extend and add on to say, oh no, this is our context for our vertical and our industry. Right. And then here's the last one. Your customers work across 10 plus tools every day. And, you know, there's no ending to that. You don't have an iPhone for software right now, although Claude's like coming at us. But yeah, all of these things, this is, again, the differentiation between old school type education patterns. And I'm not saying that negatively. You go to university and you do things that way and it's that, it's fine. We don't have time for that. We have to get content out. We have to update it. We have to customize it. We have to curate it. How are you going to do that? That's what we're talking about.
It's awesome. And if you look at those problems today through the lens of 20 years ago, then it becomes overwhelming. Then you're like, there's no way I could possibly do this. I need a team of 50 to be able to do this. And that's not happening, right? We also know that. What we're trying to do, again, go back to the first principle thinking, is we need users to change their behavior. That's why you bought the software tool, is so that they'll change the behavior to get to the outcome of why the business bought it. So there is actually a third option. And again, we need to look from a lens of today, not options that we're giving 20 years ago. So there's two options that you have, and you should be using this simultaneously. You should have a common portal. I don't disagree with the common portal. And Dave, I don't think you would disagree with the common portal, because it's there to usually for your smaller type of accounts. You know, you don't have the ability to provide all the different services to them. But then you also have the ability to do what private portals. Now, we're calling these private portals. I don't like the word extended enterprises. And our guy, Todd Kirk, is going to join in this call in just a second to explain why private portals aren't extended enterprises or a copy of one of your academies and just recopied into another link. It has to be more than that. So let's dive into this of what we mean by private portals. Dave, talk to us a little bit about why you think private portals are so important for those enterprise type of customers that are saying, hey, I need this to be tailored to me. Talk a little bit to that.
Yeah, okay. I want to back this up with some real experience.
Nice.
Like hard-won stuff that I had dealt with recently, and talk to you about the impact of a private portal, what it actually means. So let's think about this again. We want, pardon me, a customer wants something curated and customized to them. This word bespoke that I've heard in a lot of places it terrifies some education teams. What do you mean? We have to tweak and change things for every single customer? That is not possible. Actually, it is, but not in the way that you might think. You're not changing every piece of content and putting logos and stuff like that. No, you build once, distribute many. Right, build once, distribute many. Before, hey, okay, well, I have to give you training put in your system. Okay, we do it, we make agreement, I hand it over to you, you grab it, well, thank you, it's a copy. Is it current? No, right? Updates. Well, I did that 3 months ago, and now another thing came up, it was really important, but I don't have mechanisms to be able to transition that data to you, notify you, get you that update without having a business operations function, a process, an SOP around that. And that's human headcount or AI or whatever you want to. Let's get away from AI right now and just think about it. If I was doing it from a normal team, okay, Jane, can you go do this? Joe, can you go copy this and get it to this customer? Okay, now how do I keep track of that? Where is it at? Okay, updates are now getting missed. Now we've got those reporting quests, because remember, we wanted to get, you know, data about what happens, right? If I'm maintaining the content, the customer has agreed to come to me, then now I have reporting requests. Or bi-directionally, if I give that customer my content, I kind of want to see what they're doing with it. I'm going to ask them for reports. It's not just one way. It's a dance. Customers and we are one, and we have to start thinking about ourselves as building that bridge and that network between us. And then, okay, who does all this? The CE team has to manage everything. It is an overload. Now, let's go to the concept of the private portal. So at one of the last companies I worked for, we were really heavy into this concept of, well, can we frack off a little, you know, micro portal, which is looking at the same content and distributing it, you know, kind of syndicating it into this different platform, but now it's the same source. And now customers can kind of pivot and tune, but I can look into that and they can look into that. We have one ring to rule them all, one source of content. You think of it like a GitHub or something, like a whole push from a code basis. Now we're thinking from a learning basis, where, you know, Brainstorm is kind of the GitHub for learning for a lot of our customers. Updates now are flowing. They're seamless. We get notifications. They're there when changes are made. We have shared visibility. We all are collaborative now. And then the customers themselves can say, hey, you know, I saw that one was updated. I don't want to put that in right now, going back to our previous conversation about what we want to expose or not. So a customer might say, I want to hold on to that. I know that came out this quarter. We're going to get tuned up for the next quarter, because remember, there's an enablement team and the customer that's parity with the customer education team at my company. This is why enablement and customer education should dance together all the time, right? We are partners on the dance floor. We just don't think about it because we put a wall up between us and the customer. Break down the wall. That's what we're trying to do. Good.
There's one software vendor that I'm helping pilot this out. And I said, oh, hey, by the way, they're piloting the concept of a private portal. And I was like, hey, by the way, you know, your customer just trained over, 500 employees in 2 days around your new AI tool. And they're like, what? Yeah, they did it all. What? Right. And again, we think that the customer, we're going to burden them if we provide something like this to them. And I know that a private portal might not be for everybody. There might are some people that say, hey, I just want to send my users to a common portal. It's just easier for us. We're not saying that this is the answer for everything, but we're saying that there are more companies than that you think that want to manage this and will manage if you make it easy. Right. So
absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about being knocking down that wall and dancing the same way. Maybe spend some time on, and I know you did a little bit of this, but is there anything on this slide that sticks out? I mean, you covered a lot of.
Oh yeah.
Right, but yeah, talk to me a little bit what you're seeing here.
This is a great slide, Casey, to again, you know, nail down the concept is that we are not just. And when people really understand that, enablement and customer education are two sides of a coin, right? Customer education is that extrinsic type. I'm making available what about our product to everyone. This is something I think that gets lost too, because internal to my company, my team, my partners, everybody is consuming. I'm also like syndicating internally, right? Because let's say a sales enablement team, the sales enablement team internally. Let's say I'm a sales company, like when I was at Outreach, everybody at Outreach took the training that I built as the core of our enablement, but that also went out to our customers and our partners, right? Yeah. So now we're kind of syndicating in all aspects. This is really important. So that on the other side, the receiving side, think about, okay, now I'm an enablement team in charge of all the content coming from this company, and I want to make that easy. So let's look at the vendor. There are a lot of signals that we need to understand too, right? CSM or an account manager. Hey, who's engaged? Did this team actually take some training or not? They look like they're having a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I should be able to visibly see that. Now, again, if we're disconnected and the customer has one thing, we have another, and we can't see that information, nobody knows. And that breaks the principle of customer success. How do you know if a customer is getting an outcome if you can't measure it or see it? But then from my side of things, if I'm distributing a bunch of content, I have a matrix. You know, you think about an Eisenhower, whatever, four square, where up into the right is content that's both consumed and useful. The lower corner to the left is, hey, nobody's looking at it and it's out of date. So I'm constantly looking at what material's out there, what are people consuming at volume, what's missing, things like that. And then we also need that signaling of, hey, if a customer at Gainsight, this was a big part of our scorecards, where did the customer has zero people, I'm not going to give up the next couple of slides here, but if they have nobody engaged, they're not looking at content, that is a signal for churn.
Yeah.
Signal for churn, right? All right, go to the customer. Engagement and adoption, is important now for us. Like, I bought this platform. I want you to use it. Let's talk about, okay, here's one like Miro off the top of my mind. Miro was so vast and so many capabilities in it. And it was like, well, how do I make this relevant to me and my team internally? Right. So, you know, we were using it a couple of companies I had, and I go, okay, let's do this training, go to this thing, go to this. And I'm kind of curating that, but I'm doing it on the side and not with the through line between anything because our systems weren't connected at the time. I want to be able to know who's taking the training that company had internally, because I own this. And if I see there's 0%, why did I buy this platform? Right now, my management should be up my, you know what, to light a fire. And then, you know, specifically, now I love this slide in particular, because this middle bar here was at the root of a problem of an engagement that I did at one point, where we made this massive implementation, 3,000 users across partners and team members of a very large enterprise company. And there was no thought given to how anybody would learn at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be negative. It just that's everybody's mind, which it happens all the time, right? But if we don't have all that information communally, we can't get together on those, you know, quarterly business reviews and really understand and dissect what it is about our platform that we need to know, or what's working, or what people are doing. So we have to have proactive conversations. Not, hey, nobody's using the platform. Well, I see here that Casey, you know, you didn't go take the training. Oh crap. Or hey, well, you got a lot of tickets. You know, do you see a direct correlation between the number of tickets that you have in your system, your reporting system, and the training that can mitigate those calls and deflect that before people ever know? If I take a basic onboarding and then I get bumped every once in a while, those calls decrease and you get good support tickets. And now we're able to act mutually. So someone can call me up before I see it and go, hey, Dave, we have a decrease in usage. Can you help me out? This is where we want to be for success outcomes.
That's amazing. Dave, there's one software vendor I know that they, again, they have private portals, so they can see the point of contact of the customer, and the customer success manager can see data. And they rolled out an AI tool. And one of the concerns that end users had in using their AI feature wasn't about the tool of AI. Their concern was, is this responsible? Should we be using AI? Like, is this the right thing to use AI for? Well, that's not a product issue. That's the customer themselves having to address what's their AI stance, strategy, governance, right? But how would they have ever known that unless you're getting the information from the end users of why I love this, why I don't love this, where am I still struggled, where am I still stuck? Everybody wants that information. We just make it so hard to get it, right? And so I love the quote here from our marketing team. Instead of saying, can you send me a report of everybody that signed up for our instructor-led or the instructor-led training courses you set up for us, can you give me a report, to the software vendor going to the customer and saying, hey, here's what I'm noticing. Did you see that in your reports too? I'm noticing that a lot of your end users are saying this. Did you see that? Oh, what a better conversation, right?
Yeah, very transparent. And I think that's really hard, because a lot of companies are still in the mindset of, and I've talked to CEOs about this, well, I don't want to expose training publicly and free or put it on YouTube or anything like that. Why? Well, because our competitors will find out. Who cares? They already are logging in via one of your other customers and getting all of your information anyway. There's no stopping that. So let it be free, but curate it.
If people follow you, they do see this term that you like to talk about, it as an educational attach rate. I know there's a little definition here, but, you know, do you have a story, a way to make this concrete for the audience to understand what you're saying here?
What I'm trying to do in this context is to pair learning up with professional services in one way. So think about it this, I've been in marketing, I've been in sales, I've been like still in the same function in customer ed. In professional services and customer success, I've been in all these different domains. And the one that I thought actually was really useful to think about was that, you know, the attach rate to services is one metric that we measure. Okay, how many of our customers are actually engaging with our professional services to achieve the outcomes they want because they can't do it themselves? Similarly, I look at education as another service, and I can get on a whole spiel on this, why I think customer education actually evolves into and is a partner to education services, but they're different things. But when I think about myself as a service, I am helping you, Casey, and your team to learn about the product, and it should be fluid. And there should be a high attach rate initially in onboarding. You should see everybody. Like I wish I had a graphic, but if you think about an X, Y axis and a curve, and you're tracking training, and you're just, let's say you're just doing live training, that's it on Zoom. Day one that our customers would go live, there's a big spike in our usage, and you can see how many logins, and that's at 100% because everybody, maybe 99 because somebody did a job. But if you had 100 licenses, you had 99 people that showed up, they started to use this thing, and then it slides off, and then it comes back up, and then it slides off. And you're trying to get to steady state. I talk about this a lot because I was a pharmacokineticist. I worked a lot in drug design and how drugs act in the body and such. Mm-hmm. And that is really key through, because we're dosing, we're giving people kind of a drug, which is the learning. That, and if we achieve steady state, which is when you have your, you know, like you know, medicine or whatever you're trying to get to, I know how to use this product and I am consuming my medicine. That educational attach rate should be significantly high. And if it's not, then your customers are not getting the daily dose or the weekly dose or their monthly dose on how to grow and adopt from there. So a lot of teams don't measure that. You should. And if you're not, well, sadly, there's a lot of folks that just can't get the reporting metrics of the product telemetry to show what we're doing. But you can measure it if you see I'm attached to this content. This content that's getting syndicated to me and in my instance, and I'm engaging with it at this rate. That's what I'm talking about here.
And again, going back to your point, Dave, is it's just we want to the customer usually, hopefully, is helping the software vendors change and shift and give their customers what they're asking for. That's one of the things we're also introducing these concepts is push these wonderful vendors to say, hey, I need more. I want to see more. Let's solve this problem. So what would this actually look like with Brainstorm? So Brainstorm, if you don't know who we are, we solve these problems that we've just talked about today. And I brought in Todd Kirk, who's our vice president over our software advisory team, to give you an idea of what private portals could actually look like and why it solves those problems of being able to have it tailored, being able for everybody to see the same data. Gosh, train new hires. One of the things, Dave, me and you didn't even talk about, what happens if you introduce partners and then your partners are supposed to go deliver customer education to the end users? How do you even account for that? So Mr. Todd Kirk, walk us through how this might look with Brainstorm.
Going to take over sharing rights first, and then it made it so I couldn't come off mute. So sorry about that. Oh, let's do this. Let's jump in. I think this is a really awesome discussion, and excited to show you how I like to think about this. So a couple of things that I think are really critical to consider first is the traditional approach, the common approach, when you think only in terms of common portal and what that tends to lead us into. So let's say I create an academy. Well, if I want to distribute that content to other people, I basically have to create copies of that, and I create what would essentially be sub-portals. Sometimes I can sync that, sometimes it works out, but what ends up happening is I basically create a bunch of these static copies of my system. Maybe there's one for a large enterprise customer. They don't necessarily have a lot of control, they don't have a lot of data, it's just like, here you go. I put a logo at the top. It feels nice for you, right? Maybe I have one that I'm using internally and I have a little bit more control over that one because I need to add some other content for my internal folks. Or I've got a separate portal for my partners where I'm trying to track and see what they need to do. But what happens if I then have a customer who says, I need more control. I want to have this more personalized experience. Well, they live outside that ecosystem entirely. So either what they have to do is they have to send their users to the academy and then bug you for reporting data back, or I have to send the assets to them and then I lose visibility. So we basically both live in one of us is put in this really rough position that doesn't really work. Well, what I like is to think about instead the distributed model. So what the distributed model looks like is, what if instead of creating an academy, I created a place like a hub to distribute content from. And what I think of here in this case is, what if I instead of like, I'm going to send you assets, I'm going to create a bundle that I'm going to call your playbook. And that playbook is going to be any comms that a CSM might give you to send out to your end users. It might be any micro learning videos or assets that are going to be helpful. It might be courses. It could be events. It could be surveys, right? I'm going to try to get feedback from the end user. All the things that you need to help a customer accomplish some specific goal. And that could be like, I'm onboarding new users, or I'm transitioning from one version of your software to another, or I'm actually trying to fix people who are using it poorly and get them to change their behavior. So there's a lot of these different points where I might need education for a user. I just had a customer tell me one of the hardest things is knowing how to reach the user at the right time. The customer might know, the partner might know, maybe the CSM knows, but the customer education professional, they are so far removed from it, they're not able to then hit the user with the right resources at the right time. So by bundling up all of these tools and disconnecting the portal from the content, well, now what do I do? Well, okay, maybe I need to actually pass that content over into my common account in the academy. Maybe I need to pass that through to my internal teams. Maybe I need to pass that through to a customer. But because the content is something that I am controlling in a bundle, I never lose visibility in all of that. Better yet, let's say I need a partner and he's going to take on that whole entire process too. Well, good news, the partner can take that playbook, pass it through to their customers, and I never lose visibility throughout that entire process. So with that context, let me show you what that looks like in practice. Okay. So I've got my fake company. I picked you, Dave, because I figured we needed a Dare Tech out there. So I made my fake Dare Tech company here. Dare Tech has their playbook. In Brainstorm, we call that a pack. And what could go into my fake software vendor's playbook here is, like I said, all those different resources. I might have videos. Hey, what is Dare Tech? Maybe I've got a course. Here's how you launch Dare Tech. Maybe I've got welcome communications for an executive send out to their end users. So those are bundled up. Maybe I've got a survey that asks users, what are you trying to do with the software? All of those resources are then put together and bundled into a package, a playbook that I can then send out. Now I can load any types of assets that I want into my distribution account. And then from there, I'm going to put that all into my bundled package of playbook resources. Well, let's look at this great example. So I right now, maybe I only sell through channel. And so I've got Kirk Advisory, I've got an account. Well, I don't know anything about what Kirk Advisory is normally doing. So maybe I need to see what Kirk Advisory is doing. Well, I'm going to grant Kirk Advisory as my service provider, my partner here, to go out and provide this training to their account. So let's look at the perspective of Kirk Advisory. Well, Kirk Advisory has lots of customers that they're managing, that they're supporting, that they're trying to drive and help get successful. Well, one of the things that we can do is we can have these templates that Kirk Advisory can put customers into. And guess what? They have a pack, that same exact package that their tech has, I've granted access to. And guess what? Maybe they want to provide their own custom partner services alongside that. They can. And here's all of the resources. So I have this welcome email, and any customer I want is going to get that welcome email starting next month. So all I got to do is say, okay, well, great. Let's just add the customers that need to go in. Maybe Horton Productions goes in and Hotel California here. And so we're like, okay, great. Guess what? All of them are now going to get access to that playbook, right? Those playbooks are now going to be licensed directly to the customer. So done just like that. All of these customers now will be scheduled to receive my welcome email, get access to the course. Everything gets launched and it's all automated just because I went through and set that up through this process. Now, the cool part about this is let's now go back to Dare Tech and let's refresh. Guess what? Now, these customers, as they're receiving that content, they'll start showing up in my list as they start to get these resources. And I can track and see what each of these individual customers are doing. And the customer also has visibility. So from the customer viewpoint, I can see each individual customer, which courses are they going out in? What emails are they receiving? Okay, what's the open rate and the send rate? How many users are they sending this to? I get all that visibility. The partner gets all that visibility. The customer gets all of that visibility. And it's all because we never actually disconnected the playbook from the distribution account. because what the distribution account is doing is just passing access to that content around to anybody who needs it. So in this model, you're able to maximize the reach because, again, let's say I'm going back here and I need to send the welcome email out as Kirk Advisory. Well, I can include my own resources. What if I'm the customer and I want that message to come from me? No problem. I can make that message come from me. Well, let's say I need to customize which assets are available in there. Okay, no problem. I can go and add my own I can go and add my own content, my own courses, right? So Kirk Advisory, maybe they want to create all of their own resources, all of their own what's new content, and all of their own courses and tools that are going to go out. And all of that can be distributed with ease through this model. So the ultimate idea is, how do I make it easy for the customer to succeed by making it easier for the content to be distributed, right? So again, remove away from that common portal and instead take your playbooks and distribute it to all of those different locations by making that the core and the center of the whole tool. So that's my really quick view of how that might work. So Dave, wow. I'm curious, thoughts, reactions to the rest.
I was going to say, Dave, what are your thoughts? And I'm going to get questions from the audience and start pinging them. Todd, stay on the line. I'm going to get the questions from those that have that are attending this webinar and ask some questions. But Dave, your reaction from that, is that the best principles you're talking about?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit of what you're seeing.
Yeah. And in practice, I mean, I've been a customer, right? I've worked with the Brainstorm platform and I've seen how this works. And the engagement and the ability to, or the impact on customers is profound. Because now we don't have these barriers in place where it's, okay, I've got one size fit all, you got to go to the here and do these things. And it's just, that's old school. New school is distribution syndication, helping to unlock the potential of your learning. And I really enjoy that because, like, it's just passed through. Everything's easy now. Now we have a lot higher engagement because we haven't gated all of this stuff and have to figure it all out. It's a simple conveyance, it's straightforward, and it makes sense for people to use it. And love this. Like, if you haven't seen, do a trial and see how this works for you. And I think you're going to be as shocked as I was at how impressive it is.
So one of the questions we have from the audience today, and again, this is a little bit away from content syndication, but it has to do with content. How do the both of you think, Dave, we'll start with you first. How do you think about, you mentioned this, and I think that's maybe what sparked a question around micro learning. You have micro learning, you have events, you have certifications, achievements, whatever you want to call them. How do you know what resources to give to your users? Where should people focus their time and energy? Because there's only so much you can do in customer education, again, at the rate of what everything's going. I know there's an answer might be it depends, but you know, any thoughts on micro learning, virtual events, certifications, any thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh.
Small team and where they might invest their time?
It's such a complex fabric of thing, but it depends on specifically on where you're at in your journey as a company. So if you're really new and you don't really have much, you may be focusing, like I am doing this again, I'm heavily on webinars. Why? Because they're easy to get people to participate from your organization, to drive, to book, and then you could take that content and chop it up into little bits. If you're further down the road, maybe not even those core moments in time, what are the top three things you need to know when you're onboarding? What are the top three things you need to know here? What is the trickiest, most complicated thing that happens with the platform? Those should be micro, right? Real small and put into a library of, you know, one of my favorite people who was my manager a long time back, called them how-to-ies. You know, a little how-to video. You can make a collection of those, but then now I can assemble those into something bigger. So I think there's just a substrate. You really need to know your customer. You need to know where they're getting stuck. You need that telemetry. Go talk to people. Go talk internally, talk externally. There's a whole process I've used that works really well for that. But start easy. Make some content, do some webinars. If you're further down the road, you can get really polished, curated material, but give yourself that grace.
Awesome. Hey, Dave, I love that. Let me add just a couple of little data points that I think are fascinating. So, you know, I've worked on in the product marketing world and I've worked on the product teams developing content, and I've worked as a customer education professional and I've worked as an internal education professional. So I've seen a lot of data in a lot of different worlds. If you look at a webinar style content that is a marketing style content, the attendance rate is going to be somewhere in the realm of like maybe 20%. Like a really good one's like 35%. You're like, yay, 35% of people showed up. It's an internal webinar, right? So one that's actually pushed by the customer, it's usually around 50 to 55% attendance rate. So it's really fascinating to see if the person pushing the webinar is the actual leader within the organization versus my marketing team, as far as who shows up. So I love that point of like, well, we want to use events, but this is why I love this whole model of distributing these resources out, because you can give the customer control to push the event, push the webinar, see who's actually succeeding with it. The other piece, I love your point about, what did you call them? How to ease, like the little tiny.
How to ease.
I like that. So the one of the things that's fascinating there is just the drop off rate of the amount of time the videos are. So even like, if you're going to start with something really small, public data shows that if it gets over about 3 minutes long, people just stop watching it. Your drop off of your completion rates of those videos go really, 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 really low. But even if I'm going to create a course, we actually did an internal survey here at Brainstorm of about 20,000 end users, and we asked how much time they have for training every week. Now think about this. These are people already consuming training, so that means they're motivated. The average was 74 minutes a week. So that works out to 15 minutes a day. So if you're making hour-long courses, and that's for all training, period. Like not just my Dare Tech make-believe company. So that means that if you're making courses that are longer than 15-minute chunks, the likelihood that any user engages with it goes down dramatically, because the average end user, even if they're not motivated, it's probably more like 20, 25 minutes that they're going to give you in a week total. So getting your content short, getting it concise, and getting it distributed to them at the time that they care about it, oh man, that matters so much. Yeah. Or else you're just... Yeah. You're creating shelfware that's like, look at all the cool stuff we made that nobody ever consumed.
Awesome. Now, one thing I'll add on here, Todd, is while I was at Atlassian, we did an experiment on building that very short form influencer style learning content. And it wasn't marketing. It was very like it explicitly had learning objectives. And I'll mention him now, Kevin Lee, who's now at LinkedIn, did just a fabulous job. And we had millions of views of that content because it was consumable, it was easy to manage, it was tight, it was fun. And that prefaced a lot of our longer form content, because you also got people go, well, that looks pretty good. I wonder what the longer form stuff is. When I have time, I'll go look at it. Or you looked at 5, 10, 15 of those little ones, and now you've got a chain. So yeah, those are consumable. But the interesting thing too, is you look at TechSmith or other companies that have stats on videos, it's surprising there's a hump around short form, and then there's a hump around really long form.
Yeah, it goes back up. Yeah. It's going back to your two hump problem. It does get better. Yeah. It's longer. But yeah, there's this like the dead zone. If between 3 to 15 minutes, it's basically
I don't get enough, I get too much, you know, I'm a little overloaded. But yeah.
Right.
You have to dial it in. What your audience is and what their attention type is in the moment. But those short ones are great to get people go, like the best one we have performed was, what is Jira? You'd be surprised how many people are like, don't conceptually understand what that is or why. But if we presented it in a very short 3-minute context, like, okay, now I want to learn more, right? But it was done in that, it's an appetizer, right? Gives me enough. Now I want to go watch, I actually don't know how to use it. I'm going to sit down with my computer and go through and while I'm watching.
Okay. We have, 5 minutes left. Okay. We're going to do one last question just for you, Dave. We're not going to let TK, because sometimes, I mean, the wisdom's great, but sometimes rambles too long. Just kidding, Todd. You're amazing. Okay, Dave, last question. I have a question for the group. Hey, I just can't even think about changing systems. I was at a Pulse conference and this lady, you know, asked me, okay, what do you do? We explained, and she's like, I love everything you do, but I've switched LMSs twice in the last 2 years. I can't even think about it. Dave, if you were to give someone just really quickly a 2-minute best practices on when you're thinking about switching from one system to another, it can become overwhelming if you just think about it too much. I loved how you did the how to ease. I loved how you just said, hey, this is just some core principle thinking. If you're thinking about switching over systems, what's just a couple principles of like think about when you're doing that, so it doesn't come so big.
You know, one of them, and just thinking about your platform specifically, is why can't you have a both and a cutover period of time where what I found that it was so immensely valuable, because we had a couple different LMSs at the time that I was engaging with you first, and we're sitting that alongside and seeing the performance of it, and the cost was reasonable, right? This made a lot of sense to us. We started to see how impactful your platform really was. Now, just to answer the spirit of the question generally, when you're thinking about cutting over a system, number one, I think it's really, and this is a soapbox moment, I think it's really important to get to the core of the politics of your organization from a leadership perspective. Because I've been in so many cases where it's a quid pro quo or in-kind type manipulation tactic to get me onto a different platform when most LMSs are the same fundamentally. You're gonna sacrifice some sets for another set. You know, get a proof of concept. Start playing with the material. See what it can do for you. Where does it benefit you? Where could it cause problems? But in the core of it, if you don't have syndication or replication or anything like that, you're gonna be stuck on one thing. When you're trying to service, like, who are your audiences? Are you gonna do partners, internal customers, whatever? There's a lot of things to think about. But take it slow and really challenge the assumptions that you may have about why. You know, if you're moving to a system that is definitely going to benefit you from an adoption point, speaking of brainstorm, because you could do things that I really couldn't see any other platform do, period. That you're bridging now, you're distributing, you're getting people in different environments to be able to consume at a rate that I hadn't seen before. Whereas if you're just gonna come to me, okay, well, it's the same old, you know. Got to build once, distribute many. We need to have options, and we need to think more modern. And modern is not just butts in seat, not just completion rates, data, adoption, all these things. We need to be able to see that and be able to share a lot better. So take it slow. Make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. But again, think from a customer success point of view and not from an educator point of view.
That was awesome. Well, I started with saying if we were at a church, we would have done an amen. We'll end with an amen. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. That was beautiful. Grateful for your time. Mr. Todd Kirk, thank you for coming in here and showing how that might look. Thankful to the Brainstorm marketing team that puts on these thought leadership events where we just want to tackle real issues that are dealing with. So look for more emails to come around, more webinars that we have around, hey, the things that you're dealing with every day. Because like Dave said, you know, we're all here trying to find the best way to help our customers win and get to that value realization that they bought our product for. So look for follow-up emails that have the recording of this webinar today, other reference materials for you to be able to use. But again, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Todd. Thank you to the Brainstorm marketing team for hosting this. And thank you, the customer, for attending this event today. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.